the order. It's 1:10, and present for the record are Representatives Cott, Anderson, Wilson, myself, McGuire. We do have a quorum to conduct business. We have one topic on the agenda today. It's the 11th of January, and the topic is that of eminent domain. So that nobody gets concerned, the bill won't move today. This is the first hearing on the subject. There are many bills moving their way through the legislature. We took this bill because it's got the most people on it and because it's my bill, frankly, and to bring up today and to start the discussion. We have a CS in front of us, and I would appreciate a motion to adopt it. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move CS for House Bill number 318, version Y, which will be before us for debate.
Okay, is there any objection to adopting this for discussion purposes, version Y? Okay, hearing none, version Y is adopted, and there'll be copies of the CS out there. It does represent a change from the other, so you'll want to pick that up. Okay, so to begin today, I'm going to have my Chief of Staff, Craig Johnson, come forward and explain what's in here. And then we've got folks from the Department of Law. We've got folks from the Department of Transportation, an attorney with the Department of Natural Resources, and others that are here today as well. And before Craig speaks, just to give you an idea, what I'm trying to do here, obviously, is respond to the Kelo decision, which, as you all know, put into place a fairly controversial ruling that said that in Connecticut, a local ordinance that allowed for eminent domain to be used to take private property and transfer it into the hands of another private entity for mere economic development purposes. And the Supreme Court, part of the decision I liked was that they upheld the ability of states and local governances to decide what the rules of the road would be for their individual states and municipalities. I think that's something really important to hold on to, is that idea of controlling your own areas that you represent. The part, obviously, that was disturbing to the public, to the level of an outcry, was the idea that your own personal private property that we respect and hold so dear as Americans and certainly as Alaskans could be taken away from you for mere economic development purposes. That's a concept that's very foreign to Americans, and I think people thought prior to this ruling that simply was not an appropriate governmental eminent domain taking. So this bill, not unlike that of Representative Lins and others, is a response to that decision to make a very clear statement that is appropriate to make at a state level as well as a municipal level, to say that in the state of Alaska that we want to be clear about the uses of eminent domain and to be careful about them, because the rights of our citizens to hold private property is something that we value deeply. And so with that comes a lot of other interesting things that have come up in my time working on this bill and in other members' time in working on this subject over the interim. The question of natural resources, and Alaska has a very unique situation where the subsurface rights are held with the state. There are constitutional provisions that require us to develop these resources for the maximum benefit of all of the citizens, and so that creates some interesting situations where you may have private property that contains these resources. How is that to be dealt with? The issue of recreational opportunities has come up. In my district, as an example, the Coastal Trail has very strong support, very strong opponents. It's generated a lot of discussion, but regardless of what your opinion is, it would require approximately 80 different takings of some type through the use of eminent domain, in theory, unless folks decided to give up their property voluntarily. And so that brought up another point to me that's included in this bill, at least now, which is that if it's inappropriate to take private property for mere economic development purposes. How appropriate is it to take it for mere recreational purposes? I guess what I want to say is that I am open to all kinds of ideas and suggestions. This is a work in progress. I want this to be a really good bill that comes out. And I recognize that it's going to take a lot of really hard work and smarter minds than me to come up with those changes that we need to make to the bill. So with that, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Craig Johnson, staff to Lisa McGuire. I think the bill originally started and will continue to be and hopefully ends up being a basically call on two very clear policy decisions. The first of which is whether or not it's appropriate to take a person's private property for economic gain. And the second would be whether it's appropriate to take a person's private residence for recreational opportunities of another. Those are policies that need to be made on this level, and that's the basis of this bill. It is not intended, it's intended to address those narrow policies. Anything beyond that, it is not intended to increase the power of eminent domain, nor is it designed to decrease the power of eminent domain. Eminent domain has some very legitimate uses. As the representative stated, we are under some pressure as a result of a Supreme Court ruling. To date, there are some eminent domain legislation in front of the federal government. I think there are 13 right now that range everything from a constitutional amendment prohibiting the use of eminent domain for economic use down to a House bill that would take away economic development money to any state or government entity that used eminent domain for economic gain. HB 318 would prohibit the use of eminent domain for economic gain and clarify that the government is prohibited from taking through the use of eminent domain someone's primary domicile, attempts to define that, which is not clearly defined in statute, and for recreational purposes. Eminent domain has a legitimate place. We don't want to address that. We don't want to change the valid uses of eminent domain. We want to address those two very narrow policy calls that is very appropriate for the legislature as the citizens' representatives to do so. A couple of people in the community, a local mayor, has said that this is a solution waiting for a problem. That seems to be one of two responses that you get. One is there's no need to do this in Alaska. The other is how do we keep it from happening here? There doesn't seem to be a lot of middle ground. In the way of background, 41 states have used eminent domain in the last 2000, since 2000, to take private property for public commercial use, ranging from over 2,100 in Florida to just 5 in Louisiana. 13 states have 47 pieces of legislation on eminent domain pending right now, ranging everything from absolute moratorium on using it for economic development to one-year stays that can't be taken. So the full gamut is being approached. Alaska is the only state at this point that I can find that is addressing the recreational use for eminent domain. So for someone to say that this is not a issue that needs to be addressed, I don't believe that's totally accurate. It needs to be addressed. We need to go on record. We stand to lose federal money by not addressing it. There are a lot of things out there that can happen. As a point of interest, the Anchorage Assembly last night voted 7-4 to adopt a statute which prohibits the taking of private property for recreational use. So we're really, the bike trail is really off the table as far as Liesl explained it earlier. It's not an issue. But there are other points in the state where recreational property could be used, and we want to address that as well. In summing it up, HB 318 is not intended to do anything other than to define those two clear-cut policy decisions. I can't dwell on that enough. Do we want to allow the state to take private property for economic gain? Do we want to allow someone to lose their home, their primary domicile, so that other people can play? With that, there are substantial changes in the bill, but all of them revolve around defining what is someone's home, what is a primary domicile, some things that are being attempted to do. Although the bill looks substantially different, it is an attempt to make sure that we protect the areas that are legitimate to use, including resource development, gas pipelines. There's a section that has been added that will not, this bill will not have anything to do with any type of oil leases or property leases. There's some clarification language that if someone builds an airport yet leases the property within the airport, that that is truly economic development, private to private. That's excluded. We don't want to do anything to hamper development. We merely want to address those two issues. With that, I have some people to thank because this has been a very tough bill to put together. Every time someone reads it, there's another little thing. What if we need to do a pull off at a highway? There's been all kinds of things. Don Bullock, the drafter, is here. I want to thank him. Ted Popley, Ledge Counsel, is here, who had input. Randy Laura with the Department of Law, and Peter Putzer with the DOT. And I know he's got some other people that he has with him, and they can answer any questions in terms of differences. They work through this process. They deserve a lot of the credit. They burn a lot of midnight oil to get this done, to get this CS. I do want to apologize for not having some of the things, a sectional analysis. This was delivered this morning and not just a lot of time to do it. There are already some amendments that we found. So this is a work in progress. But as we work through the progress all the way through to the floor, to the governor's desk, bear in mind that this bill is to address two narrow policy issues. Anything outside that scope is fair game and should be addressed, should be fixed, and I guess let the games begin.
Thank you. Okay. I'm going to go to Mr., and I can't pronounce this very well, Putzier?
Peter?
He'll pronounce it on the record for me, so you don't forget it.
I do want to comment that the people that are here today are not here to testify on those policy decisions. They're here to answer questions as how certain things were derived within the bill. If you ask them a policy question, does your department support this or not, my guess is their answer is going to be, I can't comment. So I want to get that out of the way right away. This body will decide the policy, I think.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Thank you, Craig, for your analysis of the bill. Just a quick question regarding our colleagues' legislation and proposals. How many bills are there currently similar to this one?
In the state? In this session, there are six.
Six. And is this bill similar to the others?
Similar to most, a lot of the language in our bill is incorporated in the others. Some take a little different approach, a little different area. One deals specifically with oil and gas. A couple basically have our language and don't go into the recreation. But I think that with a little bit of work with the sponsors, and I've talked to several of them, that we can roll everything into one and make it a bill. Once again, the goal of maintaining those two policy issues, if we can do that, we can make that happen.
And for the record, Representatives Guerra and Coghill have joined us, and I think I mentioned or alluded to Representative Lynn's presence, also Representative Seaton and Representative Kelly. Is there anyone else I'm missing? Not that I see, have joined us. Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a question about the language in the bill, but before I go into that, let me just state this. I share the chair's concern about the Supreme Court ruling that said you can take somebody's private property and give it to another private property owner. The big abuse there is that a person with a lot of money, with a lot of influence, can get the government to take property away from somebody with less influence and less power. And I think that was the outrage of the Kelo decision. So I will work, the chair and I have spoken about this bill, and we'll work together on language to try and address that. My big concern is that my wife once had a patient. She works in a hospital, and leave aside for the fact that at the time of his injury, he had consumed a lot of alcohol, but he dealt with a bug on his leg once by shooting it with a gun. And sometimes you write a law in a way that intends to get rid of the bug, but might do worse. And so. not a super apt analogy, but I just felt like using it. Where the chair and I might disagree, and this is something that, and you said that there are different bills, is expanding the constitutional amendment to deal not just with the Kelo case, which I think almost all of us agree should be dealt with, but also then to say the state can't use eminent domain to increase fishermen access to a fishing stream that's blocked off to the public, or hunting access. That, I think, may go too far, and I join those people who say that's a decision that your elected official should make, and in the Anchorage case, for those who oppose the Coastal Trail, they've won at the local level on a political basis. So that recreational thing, I'd like to be left to the local community. Looking at the bill, I think the chair is right in her suspicion, and we don't know this, so we probably do need an amendment unless we get a better answer. The Kelo decision was based on the federal constitution. The state constitution seems to limit the power of eminent domain to certain very specified things. Is there any language in the state constitution that would allow somebody, let's say, to take private property for something like a private commercial development? Because it seems like the state constitution has specifically said where you can use eminent domain.
You have an answer to that? I don't have an answer, Rand.
Well, my name's Peter Putzier, and it's spelled P-U-T-Z-I-E-R. I think that in the Kelo decision, the U.S. Supreme Court was applying Connecticut state law. I don't think that Alaska law is exactly the same as the law in Connecticut. That's one answer. A separate answer is that you have to have a legitimate public use. There has to be the authority to do it, and it has to be a use that's recognized, and the statutes do list a number of uses. Whether or not and how far that concept of public use can be expanded, I think that, you know, is an open question. I don't believe it has gotten any kind of rigorous examination by the Alaska Supreme Court.
Representative Guerra.
I guess my question is more specific, and I really don't know the answer to this. I just sat down and read the bill for the first time right now. But on first blush, it doesn't seem like the Alaska Constitution says you can use eminent domain for any public use. And it seems to say you can use it for public uses by the government of the United States, and we can't stop the government of the United States from doing that. So we have no authority over them. But then after that, it says public buildings. Those are government buildings, not a private commercial development. Again, public buildings in subsection 3. I don't want to make everybody read through the Constitution with me, but it seems to specifically list the uses where you can use eminent domain. Are any of these specifically listed uses ones that would allow the kinds of things that were allowed in Kelo?
There isn't a specific, through the chair, Representative Guerra, there isn't a specific provision that would allow a taking to be transferred to a private person, but it's also not explicitly prohibited either. I think it would be an open question still in our state.
I don't think that's how the Constitution is written. It's not written to say you can take property for any public use. Here are some examples. It's saying these are the only uses you can take property for. It says the right of eminent domain may be exercised for the following uses. It doesn't seem like it's making a partial list. It's providing the full list.
Mr. Bullock, you come forward, please. I just had this discussion in my office. He's far more articulate than me.
Sorry.
Good questions.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Don Bullock. I'm legislative counsel. And the particular constitutional provision that we're dealing with here is Article 1, Section 18, and that's the authority for eminent domain. And it says, private property shall not be taken or damaged for public use without just compensation. And in the case of the legislative body in Connecticut, they decided that the use in the Kelo situation was a reasonable public use in Connecticut. So I think what the bill appears to be doing is trying to define what are the parameters of public use. The statutes that are in existence already consist of a list of uses that are traditional: public buildings, highways, trails, so, you know, certain trails, so forth. And so basically, I think what you're doing at in the bill is looking at what happened in the Kelo situation and trying to define in Alaska law that that is not a public use for the purposes of our Constitution. So the extent of public use is a legislative question.
Answer a question?
I think so. So I made a mistake. I assumed that this was a constitutional amendment. This is just a bill.
Right.
So the Constitution is just one or two sentences. Mm-hmm. The eminent domain may be used for takings for public use.
That's correct.
And then statutorily we've said, but these are the only ones the state's allowed to engage in.
Right.
And so we want to, I understand. Okay.
I'll return to my
Any
seat.
Any further questions for Mr. Bullock while he's here? Okay. But stand by.
All right.
Never know with this crowd. Mr. Putzier, is there further testimony? It was my understanding that you wanted to weigh in specifically on concerns or parameters of the Department of Transportation.
I was here primarily to answer questions. I would note I've been working with Mr. Johnson, and we've come up with a draft that I think is an improvement over where we started. I think it's a step in the right direction. I think as we move along, we probably will think of certain things that we might need to improve upon. But I think this is a good first draft, and we put in some exceptions that, for the most part, attempt to protect most of the public uses already explicitly recognized by the legislature, and is therefore a more focused effort to address some specific concerns raised by the Kelo decision.
Mr. Johnson, do you want to go ahead and highlight for the committee? We have the CS in front of us that's been adopted as a work draft and the original. Just highlight the main changes for members.
I don't have the original in front of me.
Okay. Give it to you.
Yeah, no, that's...
In general terms, the first thing that we did was we put in a Section 1, which is the legislative intent and findings, and to come out and explicitly say what the problem is that we were attempting to address. That's one change, and I think that's consistent with the testimony that's already been presented. The second major change would be that in Section 2 of the original draft, it had language in there to the effect that the right of eminent domain may not be exercised for the purpose of promoting economic development. The new version that you have in front of you attempts to more narrowly target the perceived problem, and that's we don't necessarily want to allow the taking of a private landowner's property and then transfer to another private entity, another private person, private corporation. That's what we're trying to target. If we left it as economic development, as was put in the first draft, that might be overbroad, because most projects that involve eminent domain are going to have an economic development component. The most highway projects, bridges, railroad lines, other examples you can think of are going to have something that probably will have an economic development component. And so that was the reason for that change. We also explicitly wrote in that there might be exceptions that we can't currently think of. And we put in a procedure whereby there might be a circumstance that we can't foresee now where we might want to transfer property acquired through eminent domain to a private entity. And so the introductory clause of the new bill says that if you've got the written concurrence of four different commissioners, we identified Commissioner of Natural Resources, Commissioner of Transportation and Public Facilities, Commissioner of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and Commissioner of Military and Veteran Affairs, if you got those approvals, then after that, you could transfer to a private entity. That was, again, the recognition that we might not be able to foresee all the circumstances in the future and that there might be potentially exceptions to the rule. We then added several exceptions to the general rule of no transfers of private property to a private person, again, with the goal of trying to leave basically intact eminent domain practice as it currently exists and just narrowly focusing on the harm of no transfers of private property to private persons. And I can go through those one by one if you'd like. That is a change from the first draft. In the new version, should I go through those one by one?
Yeah, okay. I'll go ahead.
The new version, first of all, has exception number one, that the landowner consents either before or after condemnation proceeding to the taking. And that was out of a recognition that in certain circumstances, a landowner might not object. Maybe they get a very good deal and they don't mind the taking. And what we wouldn't want is to get bogged down in court fighting about whether or not we can do the take, even though the landowner supports it. Secondly, that the private person has been expressly authorized by statutes either to exercise the power of eminent domain or to receive an interest in land acquired by the exercise of eminent domain. And that's meant to recognize that the legislature generally has very broad powers in this area, and the legislature can say who can acquire land by eminent domain and who can acquire, who can exercise that power. And our existing statutes have certain instances where the legislature has spoken on topics like this. So this would basically leave existing law in place. Exception number three, that derives from our this is just quoting from the Constitution, that the transferred property is used for a private way of necessity to permit essential access for extraction or use of resources. That's Article 8, Section 18 of the Constitution. So we wanted to make sure there wasn't any potential constitutional conflict. Section 4, a property is transferred to a person available for public hire to transport freight or passengers by motor vehicle, watercraft, aircraft, or railroad car. Again, if this is a generally available service provided to the public, we felt that this was something that would be prudent to write in as an exception. Number five, Mr. Johnson briefly alluded to this during his introductory remarks, that the acquisition is used in part for leasing property to a private person that occupies a portion of public property or a public facility, including a private business, such as an airport, port, or public building. And there, that's based on the recognition that probably Anchorage Airport or any port really is a good example of that, where you have many spaces inside a public facility that are leased to private entities. And we didn't want to open the door to our arguments that eminent domain couldn't be exercised for those kind of facilities. And finally, the property is transferred to a person by oil and gas lease under AS 3805-180. That was simply requested to be put in there to preserve that right to be able to make that particular transfer. So that was the changes that was made to the general statute defining public uses. That's in AS 0955-240. Section E is the section that there was some discussion about earlier that goes to the recreational facilities or projects. And again, at the start of it, there is a clause that would allow deviations based upon concurrence of the commissioners, same as in the prior discussion. Again, this is it's a difficult area to think ahead and address all possible situations and possible exceptions, but clearly there might be some exceptions, and so Section E, the introductory part, is a general providing a general limitation on the ability to exercise eminent domain for developing a recreational facility or project. The subsequent sections attempt to define that more clearly. Subsection 1 defines recreational facility or project. Subsection 2 provides a specific listing of those or examples of types of recreational facilities or projects that for which eminent domain could not be exercised. Subsection 3 then lists some exceptions to that, and for example, waysides or rest stops. There's a DOT program, it's called Safe Routes to School program, that arguably might meander through some residential areas, but that we thought would be something that probably would not be within the scope of, intended to be within the scope of recreational facilities or projects. Paths or trails to or between villages or from villages to a facility or resource. There's a concern that sometimes in these remote areas there are people that will snowmobile and snowmobile tracks between these villages, and there shouldn't be an argument about whether that's a recreational use or not, or whether it's a use for which eminent domain can be exercised. And there are other specific exceptions. Often with road projects, there will be stormwater retention or treatment facilities that are specifically required. For example, on the C Street project up in Anchorage, there's some stormwater, or most highway projects, there was a requirement to have certain stormwater retention facilities. Some of these facilities are or could be used for recreational purposes, and this is another exception that we thought prudent to put in there, that it was not within the contemplation of this legislation to address that. Subsection G highlights and identifies some specific statutory authorities for DOT primarily, and DNR as well, that arguably at least might have a recreational component, but again do not seem to be within the intent of this legislation, and I can address those if anyone has questions. There are many statutory references there. And finally, in H, that calls out that takings are not prohibited under AS 4121, and AS 4121 is actually entitled Parks and Recreational Facilities, and DNR's management of these parks and recreational facilities, and the legislature has already said in several sections of AS 4121 has made several prohibitions within that on the exercise of eminent domain, so the legislature has already arguably examined that area and made decisions about when and when not eminent domain can be used under that chapter. Subsection F was meant to tie in to subsection E. I'm not sure which draft you have in front of you, but it's an extension of subsection E, and it's supposed to define when and under what circumstances eminent domain will be allowed if a recreational facility or project is involved. And if it doesn't say that in your draft, it should have basically start with a clause that says something like, for recreational facilities or projects, eminent domain may not be exercised to acquire a person's abode that is used as a dwelling place. And there's an area basically surrounding the home of 1,000 linear feet that's called out there, and it's supposed to be a protective zone of sorts, as my understanding of what the intent is there. Finally, there's just a definition section in subsection G defining what a private person means in this bill.
Questions? Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for those in the committee that don't know, the chair and I have talked about trying to figure out a way to make the bill as straightforward as possible, because this could get really complex. My concern about the way this draft of the bill is written is, instead of finding some very limited ways to prevent what happened in Kelo, or prevent those eminent domain uses we don't want to happen, some discrete things we just don't want the government to take your property for, instead, we're now at the point where we're defining a lot of things we do want the government to take property for, and which will probably lead to us saying, well, what about these other things? We might add some more other things, and it seems like a more complex way to do the bill. And so I've been trying to think, what are the uses? Let's leave the recreational issue aside, the issue access to fishing streams, hunting, trails. Let's leave that to the side for a moment. What are the things we want eminent domain to be okay for? Well, government use, nobody's had a problem with that, we were going to leave that to the side. What about taking eminent domain for to benefit private people? I think your original instinct was my original instinct, which is we just don't want to let them do that. But then you started thinking, and a bunch of us started thinking, well, maybe there's a very major gas field that we have to get to, right? But outside of the resource area, I can't think of where you would want to let a private person take land from another private person. Because if it's a shopping mall, they can just find some land somewhere else. If it's most businesses, they just have to go into the private marketplace and negotiate for land. That doesn't seem to be a problem. I can't think of a place where outside of the resource area, we want to take one private property owner's land and give it to another private property owner. So I think it's just the resource area. And then in most resource development issues, if it's drilling, you could probably do a little bit of directional drilling and find maybe another equally good piece of property to the one that you want to take. But maybe you can't. And so I wonder whether it would be enough just to leave the law as it is and then add that in the area of doing eminent domain for the benefit of a private business, only allow that for resource development issues where it's necessary for that resource development project. It wouldn't be necessary if you could directionally drill from a couple blocks away, but maybe it is necessary. But if you can't find any other way to do it and it's a valuable resource, maybe only in that circumstance allow eminent domain for the private project. So it's, I wonder whether we could, and again, leaving the recreational issue aside, whether all we have to do is say never to a private person or entity unless it's necessary for a resource development project approved by the state or something like that.
Yeah, those are good points. Yeah, it is a little bit. We got the departments involved, and you see what happened. they started thinking about all of the places that they'd like to preserve their eminent domain authority. And so this is what we got. And this will not obviously be the draft, but I think that's a good point. Rather than saying all the things that could be done, you simply say what you don't want done with a very narrow exception. So comments from anyone else on the committee at this point? Representative Seaton.
Yes. I was curious, first of all, about the private person. Is the main thrust of that something like Alaska Railroad? I mean, is that considered a private person under this, or are we talking about really individuals, or do we have basically quasi or corporations that are quasi-governmental that we're talking about?
I think that's part of the problem is we do have those. And where does that fall into? If we just had a situation as described where you can't transfer it to private except for resources, what does that do for the railroad? What does that do for resource extraction? Do you include a pipeline? Do you include transportation? Do you throw the road? So there's no simple, as I can see it, simple way to say, yes, we will simplify this and it's for resource extraction. What about transportation? What about infrastructure for that? Some of that is privately owned. So we do have the quasi-public/private that could potentially cause a problem. And the last thing we want to do is get wrapped around a lawsuit over a definition. And I think that's the reason we attempted to be more specific. I think I talked about you earlier about the more specific we are, the better. And so that's why the attempt was made to be very specific as to do's and don'ts, so that we don't have someone come up and say, well, the railroad is economic development, therefore you can't transfer it to a private, quote, semi-private organization. The railroad can't go to Delta, or the railroad can't go through Canada. I just see attorneys and judges getting around that and tying up a project that everyone in the state probably wants. So I don't know if that answers your question, but if we're talking of building a shopping mall, taking someone's home to build a shopping mall, that's very clear. That's fairly easily defined. But if we're talking about building a railroad, is that economic development? Is it not? Almost everything we do here in this state could be called economic development. Do we want to limit the use of eminent domain so that no one could ever do that? So that's the issue. Does that answer your...
Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the problem that I'm finding is there is no distinction in here between quasi-governmental agencies such as ADA or, you know, or an ADA project or the railroad and private persons. It just says private persons, which would include a shopping mall or would include the railroad. And I think that, unless I've missed it, I mean, I've just read this the first time in here, but I think that's a distinction that would be good to make.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, we do have that exception in Section 3D2 that says, that identifies that there are certain private persons to whom the power of eminent domain has already been granted. And this exception number D2 was intended to address situations like that.
So on page 5, line 23, subsection G, private person means a person that is not a public corporation, as defined in AS 4577020, or a government as defined in 1181900. And then on page 6, line 9, this section, private person has the given meaning in 955240. So there is the attempt to try to define it where the first draft, you're accurate, didn't have it. And that's been one of the difficulties, is what is economic development and what is a private entity? So it's really easy to make that broad policy statement that says we don't want to allow the government to transfer private property to another private entity for economic development purposes, but then the devil is in the details.
And Madam Chair, I guess I'm looking at page 3, line 30, where it says the private person has been expressly authorized by statute to exercise eminent domain. And I guess I'm trying to figure out if we're not talking about a quasi-governmental corporation. I'm just trying to get some read on private entity or private person. Other than those kind of entities, that we would give the power of eminent domain.
And that's a great point, Representative Seaton. When Mr. Putzier was talking earlier and brushed over that, the thought there was that there may be a private entity or person that we can't envision today that would be carrying out a project that most people would agree was a good project and was worthy of it, but nevertheless they had private status that did not fall under the definition, that this is sort of a catch-all. My initial gut instinct is a little bit of concern in the sense that it kind of seems to be a catch-all and a sort of a way around the fundamental point of the bill. There is this committee that meets of the four commissioners, and I understand that we don't always know who the four commissioners are. For one thing, they're not elected to the offices that they hold. That's another problem that I see, in that they're not immediately accountable to the public. They are via the governor, but it's a long road. And so I think there are some fundamental points, but in talking with Mr. Bullock, the drafter prior, and that's why I wanted to have this first work session, he made a good point that, you know, you might want to have escape valves. You might want to have places where there's a great project out there, a great idea that you can get through. How do you do that in a way that makes sense? And so they came up with the concept, I think, in working with the departments, I would assume, since it's the commissioners that are the four members, to try to identify a method of doing that. But just to be clear, responding to your question, that I think that is meant to be sort of a catch-all, to say that there could be a private entity or person out there that we're not envisioning today that would not be like the railroad, that would not be one of the ones that we can foresee, or the university, that may be a part of a project that has some kind of a public purpose to it or a need that everyone could agree to. So.
I appreciate that, and I guess my only follow-up would be, is we've provided that for the state eminent domain, but local municipalities, I mean, I don't know where they're sitting there with a absolute prohibition and no way around without, I mean, could this, or does the state, do the state commissioners then have a, basically a veto power over eminent domain within the municipalities? And you come to the state commissioners and say, can we get the agreement of these folks to have the state exercise eminent domain for a local community? It's a question.
You, Representative Seaton, you've hit on another initial concern that I have about this draft of the bill, which is that there is a not seemingly, there is a different standard for the state versus the municipality. So that is something that we need to consider, you know, in terms of whether we'd like them to be the same. So that there is, you've identified something that I immediately picked up on and said, oh, we've got a different standard. So, Representative Guerra?
Thank you. Yeah, that's, I mean, I share that concern. You set up four commissioners, and frankly, if you have a governor who's beholden to Walmart, and Walmart wants to take away your property, they tell the governor tells the four commissioners, and they say it's okay. So it's I know it's an attempt at a protection, but I don't think it works as a protection.
No offense to any commissioners.
In the not currently, in the future. Future governor, future commissioners. Not any future governor I know. The going back to, I still want to find a way to simplify this. And so going back to my original proposal, let's just, and I don't know that this works, but going back to the original proposal, you only let private people do it if it's for, if it's necessary for a resource development project. Craig, you mentioned the gas pipeline, but we'd have an exception that's a necessary resource development project. And then you mentioned the railroad, but that's a governmental entity. So we already say governmental entities can use eminent domain. I mean, I'm not going to be happy if the railroad starts using its eminent domain power abusively, but that already exists. So we've got the point where you can use eminent domain by government. You've got the point where you can use it for private people if necessary for a resource development project. Sitting here right now, I can't think of another place where we need to give private people the right to take other private people's land.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, utilities might be an example. Utilities do have the power of eminent domain.
Currently under the Constitution?
No, that statute.
So that's in here already?
Yes.
Just leave it as it is? I mean, so why we don't have to change that, I guess.
Through the chair, that's true. As long, you'd have to be explicit about it. That's why we say that the private, we try and provide an exemption that says a private person has been expressly authorized by statute is meant to address situations like that. The legislature has examined the situation, has spoken, and there's some private persons, depending how you define them, but utilities would be a good example of someone to whom the legislature has given the power of eminent domain, and that might want to, we want them to exercise that in the future.
Mr. Bullock? He's jumping up and down. We'd like to see you guys. This is good. Get the drafters out of there.
Well, again, I'm Don Bullock, Legislative Council. And with regard to the question that Representative Seaton asked, it might be helpful to look at the situation in Kelo itself. Kelo wasn't a situation where they took the land and then handed the deed over to a particular hotel chain or somebody else. According to Kelo, it says that there was a New London Development Corporation, which is defined or was described in the Supreme Court case as a private, nonprofit entity established before the Kelo situation came up. And the situation in New London was that they weren't blighted, which has been the traditional use of eminent domain, is tear down the slums and build new buildings. But it was economically blighted. And so they formed this development corporation to go in and see how could the economy in New London be turned around. And so they developed a plan, they presented it to the local government, and the local government in turn transferred the power of eminent domain to this corporation that's defined as the private nonprofit entity. And they went out and then would purchase the land as part in conjunction with the plan that they developed. There was a hotel built, the waterfront was cleaned up, a harbor was built, and there were other support services. What had happened was is that the situation in New London had been jump-started by Pfizer deciding to build a research facility there. And so they looked at that as the trigger to start this development project. And in the New London situation, most of the people voluntarily sold their land and were compensated. And the case arose that by some people that did not want to give up the place that they'd grown up in. So again, this was a situation where a private corporation was delegated the authority to use eminent domain. And Alaska Housing, for example, can use it in Alaska, too, even though that's a public corporation.
Representative Seaton?
Yeah, so I guess what we're saying is that the situation that developed is really the situation with the Alaska Railroad or Port Authority or the airport. I mean, if you're saying that there was a nonprofit corporation that was formed quasi-governmental even, and we're providing for that within this statute, are we really accomplishing anything? Because we're providing, sounds like, almost exactly the situation that we were trying to prevent in Kelo. I mean, we might be better off with just a resolution from the House and the Senate saying that we would look unkindly upon taking of private property for other private development. I mean, if we're providing within this statute the exact means of doing what was done there.
Now, through the chair, again, as I said earlier, the real issue here is what's a public use and who's going to define it. You can define it by statute, and in this particular approach in the bill, it says these things aren't a public use. And or if you don't provide the outside guidelines, then whichever organization, local government, or state agency is looking at exercising the power will make the decision as to whether it's a legitimate public use. Because the real test is whether it is a public use, not just a good idea. And I mean, that's the constitutional standard.
Representative Kerr.
Somewhere in here it says, and you can do it for utilities, right? That's my
understanding. Existing law.
Yeah. So why not just simply have a bill that says, a new subsection says, and except where otherwise provided by statute, eminent domain may not, and so that's utilities and private roads, so. And except where otherwise provided by statute, those things are okay. You may not use eminent domain to transfer private land from one private person to another private person. So the statute presumably already includes the legitimate private purposes. I don't think the statute includes a shopping mall. I don't think that. And so why not? What's wrong with that?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I think basically that's what the bill does do. It seems like you're restating. If you take out the language about the commissioners, it says power of eminent domain may not be exercised to acquire private property from a private person. Then it says unless it's a landowner who consents. Then we've got the broad exception under number two, and it's, as I was flipping through my notes, other examples of situations we might consider are electrical and telephone cooperatives that have the power of eminent domain. Regional electric authorities have the power of eminent domain. Port authorities, public utilities, joint action agencies. There are just a number of exceptions, and we were trying to encompass those within number two. Then we've got the Constitution, and we recognize that in number three and make sure that we don't have a conflict with the Constitution. Number four, we recognize public transport. And then number five, the lease situation, which is, you know, a complex situation. But I was smiling as you were talking because I thought that basically what you're saying is what we've tried to do here as best we could, recognize we don't want private to private, and that's what we say up front, and then subject to a few exceptions. And then the rest of the bill, you know, we're talking about recreational facilities in the following sections, and then we're talking about municipalities, and we discussed that a little bit earlier. So I think we're kind of trying to do something along the lines of what you're suggesting. And as Mr. Johnson pointed out, this is a first draft. I think it is a work in progress, and certainly we anticipate there may be some tweaking that will be required.
Representative Conkle.
Just on the history of the municipalities demanding a vote, it'd be kind of interesting to find out how the what the rationale of coming to that was, because obviously the commissioners are going to be at least similarly equivalent of that, and maybe there's a better way of doing it. But I the first thing that caught my attention on that was what's the rationale for the vote that is a public vote on the eminent domain issue that elected officials get. So I guess if I was going to zero in on how do you keep a government accountable from abusing its power to take property, maybe the commissioners aren't the best way, but I don't even know that a vote is necessarily the best way. I would have to look at it. I'd look at the rationale that came up to it. It may be the best way, but this is the first time I've actually encountered that those two different standards. So that'll be something I'll be thinking about in doing that, because tend to agree with the language of the exceptions, although I have found in statutes since we've been working on them, the more language you put in there, it seems like the exceptions multiply. Instead of actually narrowing, we actually multiply the questions. So once again, I'll be looking at that.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It seems to me that we should have something, our finished product should be something that is kind of like solid and that we know isn't going to change. And when we have the commissioners in here, we all know that sometimes the philosophy, the commissioners are appointed by the governor, and so it could be a totally different decision. The same situation can be a totally different decision dependent on the philosophy of the governor at that time. So I just think we need to think about that a little bit, because it's not rock solid,
right?
Because it can change depending on the governor, and so I think we need to look at that too.
Good point. Representative Kaku?
The way the Constitution is set up, the governor has huge power in Alaska. There's no doubt with all the appointments they have to make.
Is this your announcement of candidacy?
if we're going to start rolling back power, I might withhold that.
He's going to announce as my lieutenant governor.
I love it.
But I think that's not the
Donna, can you get one of them together? Get closer. Attorney General Bob Lynn.
Okay, we do have some other, Mr. Bullock, and then Mr. Representative Lynn, and then I also want to note that Representative Holm, who is a prime sponsor of this, and Representative Ledoux have joined us as well some time ago. And then we do have a few folks from the public, just three, that want to testify, so I'll take their testimony. And then, as I said, promised before, after this hearing, we'll work on some changes to the draft and then come back again. Mr. Bullock.
I just had one comment, and regarding the commissioners making the decision, it raises, you know, what would be the effect of the Administrative Procedure Act? What kind of process would they go to reach that conclusion, because it is affecting people's property interests? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how it would come out, but I just can put it out there for you to think about.
Mm-hmm. Representative Lynn?
I didn't really have any comment. We were talking about the COVID methane situation we had. We all heard a few things about last year, how this would apply to that. But the main thing I want to say was, I think there's a very good process here. You know, we have a lot of people interested in this thing, a lot of basically good bills out there, trying to combine the best of all into one and the worst of none. But this situation has to be fixed to stop the judicial thievery. So, and I think we're doing the right process here. I'm very happy with what's going on.
Thank you. Mr. Bullock?
Yes, excuse me, Madam Chair.
Mr. Bullock and then Representative Gruenberg.
The coal bed methane brings up the issue of access to state resources, which the state owns the subsurface rights to. And under the Constitution, owning the subsurface rights gives the state the right to access the property, and there are specific statutes that provide for the compensation of the owner. It's not an eminent domain issue. It's something that the owner receives his property with notice of in the deed. There are different rules. There's, as I understand it, there's still some private subsurface ownership on the Kenai Peninsula, and there's also the issue of the subsurface ownership by the regional native corporations. That would be an issue, but generally under common law and the right to the subsurface rights, whoever owns the subsurface rights has a right to enter to develop those.
Representative Grunberg.
I'm not very familiar with this, just looking through the bill for the first time here. It's going to be really important that all these terms be carefully defined. And I know some of the language is taken directly from the Kelo decision, but be that as it may, the phrase commercial enterprise carried on for profit, for example, I think we need to have a very comprehensive definitional section here, because I'm sure the Supreme Court left some of these up to the states to define and flesh out. But this is a statute that is a little bit unusual. It's a statute that's designed to provide guidelines for litigation. So every word in it is potentially going to be litigated, because that's the way it's designed. And it's like a contract, but not most contracts. Most contracts are designed to avoid litigation. This is going to be used because eminent domain is a form of litigation. And if we don't define these terms, the judges will define them. And the Superior Court judges will define them differently. And they'll all have to go up to the Supreme Court for uniform definition. So if we don't define it, the Supremes will define it.
Good point. Okay, I'm going to go to the Homer LIO before Representative Seaton has to leave. Two of his constituents. The first is Bob Shavelson. Are you there?
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being patient.
Sure. I enjoyed the back and forth and the discussion. My name is Bob Shavelson. I'm the executive director at Cook Inlet Keeper. We're a citizen-based nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting the Cook Inlet watershed and the life it sustains. I appreciate the opportunity to comment on this important issue today. I feel a little bit hamstrung because my comments were on the original version of HB 318, and now I've subsequently seen substantial revisions to the bill. As the panel has discussed here, this is largely driven in response to the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Kelo versus the City of New London. And a lot of the controversy has arisen because, as Justice Thomas noted in his dissent, the court replaced the Fifth Amendment's enunciated public use limitation with a broader, more permissive public purpose test for eminent domain. I agree with Justice Thomas. The Fifth Amendment should be strictly construed to allow eminent domain only when a legitimate public use would be effectuated, and the Kelo decision certainly went too far. With that said, HB 318, the original version and now the subsequent versions I've seen, I believe carve out two sweeping exceptions to the eminent domain power that go far beyond a simple fix to the Kelo decision, and they pose serious concerns for business and recreational interests in Alaska. I'm not going to go into the economic development part of that because the bill has been revised substantially, and I have to look at that more carefully, but I do believe that simply fortifying the public use test that's in the Constitution and that is in the statute satisfies the problems that were created in the Kelo decision. If you actually have members of the public physically occupying an area, using a road or a highway or something of that nature, that to me takes care of it, and I think it could be finessed without all the gymnastics required of the current version of the bill. The other thing I want to note is the HB 318's recreational use exception, which goes, again, far beyond the simple fix for Kelo. Certainly recreational uses such as trails and parks and playgrounds can satisfy the public use limitations of the Fifth Amendment, and they without a doubt add to the quality of life Alaskans have come to enjoy and expect in this state. clearly the Tony Knowles Coastal Trail Extension in Anchorage played a large role in generating this provision, but as we heard earlier, the Anchorage Assembly last night passed provisions to address that, so I don't see why it needs to be included in statewide legislation. One of the things that's brought up by HB 318's recreational use exception is the unequal treatment it promotes when compared to other legislatively permissible uses. For example, if you look at Alaska Statute 0955.240A6, it allows takings of private property for private roads to private mining sites. As a result, HB 318 adopts a public policy that places private property in jeopardy of condemnation for an open pit mine, but refuses to grant a similar consideration for snow machines, sled dog, or similar trail access. This inconsistency not only undermines private property rights, but it legislatively asserts that takings of private property for mining corporations is sound policy, while similar actions for access by Alaskans to trails is not. I see that my time is coming to a close, but I would say that if we really want to address probably the most contentious and important property rights issue in this state, it would be the split estate issues, where lessees of mineral resources have an absolute legal right to access the surface estate of private property owners. That issue really came to a head in the Mat-Su Valley and the coalbed methane debates recently, and it's going to continue to fester until they're adequately dealt with. And with that, I'll close and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shavelson. Your representative was listening intently, taking notes. Pete Roberts. Oh, pardon me, there's a question. Representative Gruenberg.
Yeah, and maybe Mr. Shavelson is not the person to ask this, but the only types of commercial enterprises that will fall under this bill will be those that are carried on, quote, for profit. Mr. Shavelson, as I understand it, you are employed by a nonprofit, right?
Correct.
Isn't it easy to get around this whole bill by simply setting up your organizations and the transactions so that there is no net, quote, profit?
Well, we're still a private entity, so I think that would still create a problem, whether it's a nonprofit or a for-profit status. I think transferring it to a private entity is the issue and not so much the net return that comes from the transaction.
Please take a look at the bill carefully, sir. I refer you in the Y version that hopefully you have the proposed committee substitute, page 3, line 24, for example. I don't need an answer now. You may want to reconsider what you've just said, and you can do so by providing something subsequent in writing. And I would invite anybody else to correct me if I'm wrong. But if I am tailoring a suit, I don't want to do it so it creates a giant loophole that's bigger than the suit. That's a suit of clothes, not a lawsuit, Mr. Coghill.
Okay, Mr. Pete Roberts.
Roberts of Homer, Alaska. Some of you folks might remember me in that I headed up the fight against the Homer annexation. And this is an issue that's very much like annexation in some respects, and that is that a group of politicians can get together and decide to do something with your private land, and it is very hard to stop the action, and yet we have the obvious need for roads, public facilities, military posts, and here in Alaska we're going to have to address trails and access to remote areas, and they may have to come under this eminent domain if people don't want to cooperate. So to frame it, my views on this, I realize that we have to have an eminent domain for various reasons for the public. I'm very much against eminent domain taking property to turn it over to the public good for reasons like the New Haven decision, because the only public good that's going to come out of that is tax money, and that is not justifiable in my view, and probably in most private people's view in the country. So the issues I'd like you to look at are access issues versus roads. If a road is a reasonable thing to build. An access strip is also. The recreation on the Tony Nails Trail in Anchorage is an Anchorage issue, and they call it recreation. But in rural areas, and I've been on the Kenai Peninsula Advisory Planning Commission down here, we have needs simply for people to go from one piece of land to another, and there's private land in between. We've had several issues like this, and I believe access in the state is a valid reason to consider using an eminent domain. And I think you should really roll this around before you limit it. As Mr. Shavelson said about you could have a road to a mine, and that some of that right-of-way could be acquired through eminent domain, that is less justifiable for public benefit than a access for people to hunt and fish and do subsistence and go to other properties. The land in two estates, and Bob brought this up again, the mineral rights, it's a very interesting issue. I've been interested in this and water rights all my life. And it's going to have to be handled separately. One, because it's a federal issue about the two estates in most cases. And I don't think that should be addressed in this bill. I think that the first version of this bill was about the right length. The second, I guess we have the Y version. There are too many papers involved. It just becomes too confusing. So please look at that. It should be fairly simple. Land shouldn't be taken so that somebody can make a profit on it. Land shouldn't be just taken so that a municipality or government entity can raise taxes from that land either. Compensation. I think that the compensation for land that is acquired by public domain should be handled, and this should be in law, by two local private land appraisers, and then that should be the what the government has to pay for that land. If they don't want to pay that much for the land, then they shouldn't be able to take it. Lastly, the four commissioners that was being batted around, and I heard this on the on your discussion earlier, I'm very much against it. You would have completely different view of what should be done with four commissioners, say, from the Knowles administration as against four commissioners from the Murkowski administration. I don't think that's valid. I think it should go back to the legislature, and no project that requires four commissioners can't wait a year until you guys can speak. And thanks, I am done.
Thank you very much, Mr. Roberts, for your testimony. Dana Olson in the Matsu LIO, and then I just have one other person, Kevin Ritchie, here in the audience. Dana Olson?
Hi. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. I would like to address something that Cook Inlet Keeper said. I filed a 12-page petition to the DNR commissioner addressing recreational use, and I do believe it is applicable to this bill. I wanted to bring up today the issue that the mineral entry is a very rare exception to our property laws in Alaska, and that I do own my mineral entry, and I feel that your bill would substantially change the Alaska Statehood Act in the way you're proposing. Today I'd like to bring up the issue of the right of privacy, Article 1. Section 22 in the Alaska Constitution has to be addressed by the legislature. One of the ways that I'd like to see it addressed is I'd like to have the denial for the right to revise the land use plans, state land use plans, in writing before you pass any passage, and I have requested this. I'd like to specifically bring up that Senate Bill 196, 1987, specifically says that right-of-way shall be in land use plans, and I believe that your bill today is potentially addressing corridors. I just sense this, and since Alaska Survival versus DNR was used as a standard for a pipeline, I am affected in your rulemaking. And so for a person to have their property having one standard and having a legal standard of something else, there has to be a way to read law consistently. And so I feel that you have a lot more work to do on this bill. I hope that you will allow the public to provide testimony. No one here in the Mat-Su Valley knew about this bill because it wasn't pre-listed on any list. And so I would like you to hold this bill and then take more public testimony. Thank you.
For the record, the bill was noticed in 5 days, so it was properly noticed, and as I announced at the outset of the meeting, the bill will be held over. Thank you for your testimony. And in wrap-up, we have Kevin Ritchie, the Alaska Municipal League.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. My name is Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipal League, and really appreciate the opportunity to talk in a work session and your statement that you'll be working on the bill, talking to municipalities is very positive. I think one thing we like to think of in Alaska is we are different than other states, and we have the strongest local self-government provisions in our constitution of any state in the United States. As Mr. Putzier said, you can't really define good and bad public takings in a lot of ways. You know, there's different situations where the public good may far outweigh the taking, and there's procedures to make sure the takings are done well and so on. And one of the things that we have, while the federal government is working on an eminent domain policy, state governments may well feel that the federal government is not the best suited to determine policy for the states. In the same way, municipalities may have situations that simply there needs to be local control in that area and a local judgment made. One of the statements made today was that whoever is the arbiter on these types of issues needs to be accountable to the public. And in fact, the way the statutes are written right now, city assemblies are in fact accountable to the public, and I think history has shown in Alaska have been very well balanced in terms of using the power of eminent domain. I haven't done an exhaustive study, but so far we really haven't seen any situations where there's been what people would consider really bad consequences, kind of like the New London situation. So anyway, I just want to leave that with you, and certainly municipal governments are not going to comment on things that the state feels necessary to control eminent domain in state government. And just want you to recognize that there is a good system in place now where people can readily get at the group that may be making a decision over whether this particular eminent domain issue is appropriate or not. So anyway, thank you very much, and we will very much be happy to continue to work with you.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. Mr. Ritchie, I'd be interested in knowing from your members, and I guess I'd also like to know from the Department of Transportation, whoever does condemnation at the state level, are we really talking about stopping taking, or are we just talking about paying private owners more? So is this really what we're talking about, of preserving my rights to keep the property, or is this basically a holdup of the state for more money or the municipality? What's really going on here? As Stephen Breyer, the justice on the Supreme Court, says in his recent book, that when he and a group of similarly minded jurists analyze from a constitutional point of view, they don't only look at the text and the history, but they look at the practical implications of what they're doing. And I think that kind of analysis is something that's good for us on this committee to do and in the legislature as a whole. I want to know what the practical implications of this dispute are. Are people just seeking more money from the government, or are they really seeking to stop this so they can live in their home? Generally, what goes on here? Do you know? Can you find out?
Matt, through the chair, certainly that issue is probably in the hearts of the people that are bringing the actions. And in the case of the Kelo situation, the it appeared that, a person really, really wanted to stay in their home.
It seemed to me that sometimes they used to say in law school, and you guys who've been to law school can correct me, guys and women, can correct me, that tough cases make bad law. And this may have been the wrong factual situation from a statistical point of view. It may have been the one that really tugs at your heart, but it may not be what's really going on here. I'm sorry, get on my soapbox.
Madam Chair, if I may, one thing I did forget to say, which a number of people have made comment on today, is that at least three municipalities, Anchorage, Fairbanks, North Star Borough, Kenai Peninsula Borough, I believe have all adopted fairly substantial eminent domain ordinances on their own level. And they were able to do it quickly. And frankly, of course, those ordinances can go back and be changed, as well as statutes if you get it wrong. One of the advantages on the local level is if you're in a community like Nome, you have the ear of 1/40th of the House and 1/20th of the Senate. You know, so it's hard to go back and fix things. On the local level, there is an ability to judge. And as you saw in the statutes that currently exist, if you're a second-class city, which is really the majority of cities in Alaska, you've got to go to the voters to undertake an eminent domain procedure at this point. So there, you know, there is a fairly strong history of local option on this type of issue. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ritchie. I'm told one other person added online. My apologies. Garvin Bucaria in the Matsu LAO.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to provide a bit of information here. Here in the Matsu, particularly in Wasilla, we're subjected to about every possible impact there can be. Our community has changed significantly. I personally am impacted by a proposed 2004-2005 Main Street study, which would run a road past would be to the west of Cars and would go through a vacant gravel pit, on through a Lutheran church, on through a series of small baseball fields immediately to the east. Prevailing wind is from the east of the Iditarod Elementary School, on through my house, across the Carpenter Circle, and on over up the road to connect with Wasilla Fishhook. And all I can say is I was informed of this in 2004. I am subjected to the stress of what is to happen. I've lived here for 20 years as of this year, and it's convenient. I don't want to move, and nor does my wife. We are senior citizens. We like to walk. It's convenient, but the change in this community is significant. I helped to protect the house of the person at the end of our road, the Carpenter Circle, during the widening of the Wasilla Fishhook and straightening there. So she and her she is a senior herself, but she's taking care of her mentally challenged mother. And working with DOT, we were able to protect her and her residence, so she is protected. And then I find that I am potentially on a one-way north routing that would take my house potentially. Now, it's been over a year. I still don't know what's happening. It's very stressful, and I don't like the situation. I would suggest that there be some alternatives so that the parties that might be subject to a taking can negotiate with the DOT prior to the routing of those roads so that there can be adjustment. It has been done, and I have found that the person that I worked with, who has since retired, was very accommodating, and they did their very best to help those folks at the end of the road. I would like that similar consideration. I'm very concerned that that your committee revisit sections 1 AS 09.55.240, section A, number 4 and 5. I find it very difficult to accept that mining dumping of tailings is benign. Under the Constitution, the public health is a major priority for the citizens of the state, and there are numerous proposed mining ventures, which may take priority over the health and welfare. And I suggest that dumping places for working mines and tailings need to be considered the health effects and long-term, very long-term effects. I find that in the northern portions of the Alaska Range, there are some coal activities. You are familiar with them. And in my hunting efforts up in that area, I find that there's acid mine drainage. It's been going on a long time. It's probably not very significant. But with the scope of some of the current developments, I'm afraid that the effects may be far more severe and have a an effect on the sustained yield capabilities of our fish and wildlife. And so providing access for mining, but not for public recreation, and those factors which ameliorate the stresses of our developments are important. And so I also support some reconsideration regarding the recreation use and public access for fishing, hunting, and travel in this state. And this is important to our mental health. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else in the audience that I've overlooked? Sure. Anybody else online? Okay, Representative Guerra.
Garvin, if you're still there, I've got a question for you. You raised a point I hadn't thought about. That's right. I mean, there's certain mining activities in the state that provide no revenue to the state. So does this bill, I guess I would be concerned about why we would take somebody's property on one hand to give it to a miner who's not going to provide revenue to the state, too. That's the concern. Garvin, where in the law is that provision that you wanted us to take a look at?
Well, I was merely looking at the Constitution relative to, but in this law, it's the Section A, the very first part of the, I had a copy of the older version, so it has to do with, let me give you, it was AS09.55.240A in parens, and then numbers 4 and 5, and that's where they were talking about dumping places for working mines, tailings, deposits, or refuse matter of mines, occupancy in common by owners or possession of different mines of a different place for the flow, deposit, and conduct of tailings or refuse matter from their several mines. It's the public health concern and what is going to be the priority. There are a number of places in the Constitution where the state administration and the governor and so forth are to protect the various values and the quality of life of its citizens, but in many cases there are no priorities. And I think with education, public health, and mental health, this is very important.
And just to be clear, this version of the bill is existing law. So the policy regarding mining tailings isn't something new that we're considering. That version of the bill was incorporating existing law and saying the exception would be economic development purposes. So
I understand that, Madam Chairman, but I also recognize that this is something that needs to be addressed. It has particular significance for the folks over there in the Iliamna area. It has particular significance based on the DEC's mixing zone regulations. It's very, very important, and I hope you folks don't pass it by.
Thank you very much. Okay, with that, we're adjourned.